You ever have like that one thing that you just wish someone would have told you at 22 that maybe you could have avoided some pain and heartbreak? That's what this episode is about. Welcome to this next episode of The Break Breakdown. I'm Courtney Romano, and I am a writer and a filmmaker, came to it by acting. And this is my podcast about breaking into the system or the industry, whatever that is for you, and breaking it down from the inside out, making it a better place and making it a more honest and wonderful place to be and to make art. And today's episode, I'm really psyched about. I am actually a little nervous about it because I feel real passionate about it. And I feel that sometimes when I get super enthusiastic about something, I kind of like my mind kind of goes in a whole tizzy. But I'm gonna try to keep it focused. This podcast today is about, let me just tell you, this is about the minimum wage, okay? And basically, how it ties into being an artist or arts worker. And it's something I wish someone would have maybe explained to me when I was 22, because there were a lot of things I was internalizing that now, many, many years later, I'm just unlearning. And this kind of idea of the struggling artist has always been in our culture, it feels like. When I was in high school, Rent came out, and like that was all about. No. It came out when I was in like middle school. I wasn't in high school in 1996. That's absurd. but it was all about these struggling artists, and we all really accepted that because that was what we. Like, that's what everyone affirmed. Yes. If you are an artist, you're either a celebrity or you're struggling. Those are the two ways to be. There's no kind of, how do I want to say it? Like, middle class artist, right? You're either broke or you're wealthy beyond your imaginable dreams. So, this idea of the struggling artist, I think, has always confused me. And I used to think that, I wrote my college essay on wanting to be a bohemian and like sip coffee at the downtown Manhattan and like be with a whole bunch of friends. Like, I think I was actually just trying to recreate the Rent scene in my college essay, but I did have this very like romanticized version of like, yeah, we're gonna be struggling artists and we're gonna tell the truth and we're gonna, speak truth to power and we're gonna be honest about everything and make beautiful stuff and no one's gonna understand us, but we're gonna understand us, blah blah. Then I actually got into the city and started living that struggling artist life and it looked very different. And I was like, actually, no, I would like commercial success, I would like a steady paycheck, I would like health insurance, I would like to not have to, worry about did I work enough weeks this year to even qualify for health insurance? Thank you, Actors Equity Association, and all of these things. So there's a lot of kind of mental, I guess you'd call it unclarity, confusion, muddiness that comes with the idea of being a struggling artist. And the reason why I'm linking this idea of the struggling artist and the minimum wage and capitalism is because of a conversation that I had with Kimberly Dotson. That was episode 20, I believe. So when this comes out, I think it will have just been the previous episode to this one. And so definitely go back and listen to Kimberly's episode first, or second, it doesn't matter. But she said something in that episode about the weight of capitalism that I thought was so profound and so succinct and was exactly it. Like, it was exactly it. And it got me thinking a lot about how we define ourselves as either struggling artists or thriving artists with not much room in between. And also, why do we put those ideas on ourselves? Now, when I was when I was still acting and auditioning a lot, I was working at a restaurant and bar. And whether I was bartending or I was waiting tables there, people obviously want to talk to you. They want to know who you are, what you're into. And I mean, not always, but sometimes you'd come across these people. And I remember someone being like, oh, you're an actor. Oh, that's so cool. I'm like, yeah. And they were like, well, what have we seen you in? And I thought it was the most condescending question. First of all, it made me feel like, well, what are you saying? Like, I'm like here for your entertainment. Maybe they were probably trying to be really nice, but I was also quite bitter at that moment in time because it was a really toxic, hostile work environment. So anytime I was there, I was bitter. But it also implies that the actual outward, tangible resume building thing is the career, which is tying your identity to your quote-unquote output, or not output, not tying it to your output, but actually tying it to your like visible output, right? Because you know, as an artist, you're doing a million things every day that nobody sees and nobody cares about, and that's fine because you're doing it because you're an artist. But people get fixated on this. So today's episode, okay, this is a long-winded way of saying, today's episode, basically by the end of it, I want you to have a completely reframed argument for the next time someone asks you, have I seen you in anything? You know, oh, you're an independent musician? Well, does that make you money? Or, you know, when can I see you on Broadway? When can I see you in a film? When are you going to be in a major motion picture? When are you going to make it? Like, what is the thing? When I, as a person outside of this arts world, can be happy and content defining you as an artist? When you get that question, the next time you get it, I want us all as a collective to have this brand new reframed argument and reframed response to that. So let's do it. When people say struggling artist, it puts the onus on the artist. But the struggle in art is actually like what the art needs to be good. Like if creating a piece of art or music or photography or anything like that was supposed to be easy, everyone would do it, right? So there has to be a certain amount of struggle. There has to be, for a flow state to happen, there has to be a certain amount of challenge and a certain amount of skill that you don't have, but that you're actively working towards while you're engaging in the challenge. So the idea of like a struggling artist is making it sound like as if, it's making it sound as if struggling is antithetical to good work. And yet struggling within your art, struggling to create that art piece, is actually completely integral. It's to good work. It's necessary for good work. The struggle is the work. So that's number one. Number two is, you're not a struggling artist. You're a struggling capitalist. And here's why. So this is why I wanted to talk about the minimum wage. It's obviously something that we've been talking about in our public discourse for a while, and very recently. As to when this podcast will come out, it will have just been, I'm recording this like in March, and it'll come out in April. So we just went through this whole situation with the stimulus bill, and is the $15 minimum wage going to be in there or is it not? And it wasn't in there, yada, yada. So it's on the minds of people. If the minimum wage, so the fight right now is for $15 an hour. The federal minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. We're fighting for $15. Okay, but if the minimum wage in this country kept up with both inflation and worker productivity, then the minimum wage in the year 2021, the year of our Lord, should be over $24 an hour. And I will link, by the way, whenever I give you stats, I'll give you the citations in the show notes so you can double check my work. All right, so if the minimum wage kept up with both inflation and worker productivity, that would be $24 an hour. Not 15, which they said no to, but 24. So wages used to keep pace with production. I think we all get the inflation thing. Like, yeah, over time, like money inflates. I don't even know what that really means, other than like I know what it means. You know what I mean? But when we talk about the pace of production, it's like, okay, the company is more productive due to the workers' work, so the workers' wage increases. And that changed in 1973 when essentially the upward trend flattened out completely. So the productivity kept rising and the hourly compensation basically stayed the same, dipped down for a little bit, and then like slowly inched back up to basically in 2021, like right above where it was in 1980, barely above that. So productivity basically jumped from 1973 to 2014. Productivity jumped by 72%, but hourly compensation grew by 9%. Okay, so that should have been obviously 72% and 72%, and it was 9%. All right, so what does this mean for being an artist? When you live in a capitalist system where the rate of productivity output from workers is literally the highest that it's ever been in our country's history, and the wages have remained the same since 2009, that's that $7.25 federal minimum wage that was in 2009 is still here today in 2021. When that's the economic system you live in as an artist and an arts worker, then why would anyone think that arts workers should be thriving? Literally no one is thriving. And if you are thriving, if you're listening to this and you're thinking, yeah, it's not that bad, well, then you're incredibly well off compared to 63% of Americans who are living paycheck to paycheck. That's 63%. I mean, that's insane. In the richest country in the world, that is insane. And also, like, just to put out there as well, as I mentioned, when I was auditioning, I was also working in a restaurant. I had so many different jobs. I mean, I was always picking up gigs, always picking up, you know, a babysitting job here or there, or like making ends meet any way that I could. So, and that's like completely normal. And that's, even if you're not an artist, that's completely normal in this day and age. Most people have more than one job, just how it goes. So if you are an arts worker, chances are you're also a restaurant worker, maybe you're an essential worker, you're in education or other jobs that are not benefiting financially from the work and the productivity that they're doing. Okay, so presumably I've convinced you that we should be giving out a $24 minimum wage. I know someone's rolling their eyes at me right now, but please click on my citations. Okay, so how does this tie into the struggling artist? Before we get back to that, we have to dip into mental health. Mental health, the minimum wage, capitalism, all of these things go hand in hand, because all of these things work on us to move us in the choices that we make. And I want to tell you about a story that kind of illustrates this. So I was in a very vulnerable time in my life. It was right after the Great Recession, like 2010, probably around there. I hadn't been able to get a job acting on stage for 3 years. I had been in restaurants, I had been catering, I'd been working, and I was working and I was paying my rent and I was living paycheck to paycheck, like 63% of Americans in the year 2021 are doing, just to hit that one home again. And I had just gotten my equity card. Now, your equity card is your Actors Equity Association membership card, saying that you're part of the union. And at least I'd gotten it in 2008, which, as we know, was a great year for theater. 2008, when literally every budget went from, yeah, let's do these big shows with 20 people in them, to let's do this 4-person show. And we're going to cast like basically all non-equity actors, all non-union actors, and one equity actor. And so that was the kind of world that I had gotten my equity card, had gone into when I got my equity card. Basically a space where all the budgets had dried up because it was the Great Recession. No one had any money. the contracts that were going out to not many people. And of those people, you probably would do better if you were non-union. Like, there would be more opportunities for you if you were non-union than if you were union, like I had just become. So I didn't work for 3 years. For 3 years, I didn't step onto a stage and do what I had come to New York to do and what I had been doing for a couple years before that recession hit. And it was also at a time when Craig, my husband, was also acting, and he had this amazing gig, this amazing Shakespeare Festival, and he was getting paid basically nothing, basically enough money to feed himself each week, and that was it, because he was also earning his equity card. And everyone knows that when you earn your equity card, what you're really doing is they're saying, like, you're getting experience and you're getting your equity card, and that's about it. Like, we don't have money to pay you, but you can join the union. Okay, so this is a tough moment in time. My husband was, we had just gotten married. He was away. We were, I think he was there for 9 months. And so we were apart for 9 months, like in the beginning of our marriage, which was tough. We had all of these financial hurdles, just because, like, we didn't, you know, we weren't making a lot of money. We were trying to pursue what we wanted to pursue. We were doing the things that presumably you would do to get ahead, which is get your equity card, get more prestigious work, all of this stuff. But it was a challenge. It was paycheck to paycheck. It was counting my cash tips every night and, like, making sure I deposited it at the right time and all of that stuff. Stuff that people do every day in this country, every day for their entire lives. And, you know, I'm just kind of painting that picture, not to be like, oh, woe is me, but painting that picture because I feel as if someone out there who is a brilliant artist who feels so down on themselves because they do the same thing needs to know that we're all doing it. Many of us are, 63% of Americans are doing this. This is not you. This is not indicative of your art. This is not indicative of your talent or your drive or your mission. It is indicative of the capitalist economy in which we are a part. So at that time, I got approached, or I was in conversation with a friend, and long story short, and I actually talk about this in episode 10, I bought into a pyramid scheme because I thought that this was my way out. I thought, okay, this is the way out of this horrible restaurant job where I'm being essentially, like, sexually harassed every day, and my boss is like so gross, and half of the customers are just, like, absolutely inappropriate, and I don't feel safe, and, like, this is a way out. And I have a lot of love and compassion for people who do pyramid schemes, because I know what it feels like when someone comes up to you and is like, no, this is a great way to make money and you are in full control of your life. You're not thinking, when someone says that to you and you're in a really vulnerable spot, you're not thinking, oh my God, I'm going to be a millionaire. You're thinking, oh my God, whatever XYZ situation is going on right now that feels unbearable, maybe that can stop. And I haven't figured out how to pay my bills and make that horrible situation stop. And maybe this is it. And anyway, that was a really tough time, because the pyramid scheme ultimately was a scheme, didn't really work for me. I assume there are people in that organization that it did work for. I realized what it was, like, 8 months into it and left. And again, I talk about that in another podcast episode, so I won't go into it now. But it was also, I convinced myself and was helped to be convinced that the only reason why I did finally book something was because of that pyramid scheme, because I did that job, because I bought into that organization and helped other people come into that organization. So when I booked that job finally after 3 years, it wasn't because I had stuck with it. It wasn't because of my resilience. It wasn't because of my talent. It wasn't because life is chaotic and unfair and confusing and doesn't really make a lot of sense. And I just happened to get it. The whole framing around it was, well, you got it because you have finally made a change in your life because of this blah, blah, blah pyramid scheme. So why am I telling you this? As artists, we very, very often internalize and take on these systemic issues and systemic problems as character flaws in us, or as a sense, an idea that somehow we should just get it better. Like somehow we should just know better. Somehow we should just be further along. Somehow it should just be easier. Why isn't it easier? Why is everything a struggle? Why, if I'm doing all the things people tell me I need to do, why can't I pay my bills? Or why can't I get seen for anything? Or why can't I get someone to read my script? Or what, you know, and I'm saying that again, like, I don't want it to sound like a whiny thing, because look, no one owes you. One of the things that Steven Pressfield says that I love is no one wants to read your shit. Like, it's true. No one, the people who love me the most, not all of them have even read the book that I wrote. Like, that's okay. No one wants to read your shit. I'm not writing. If I cared about how many people read my things and felt like some kind of connection to that, and like that somehow defined me as an artist, I would be very sad. And I don't have time to be that level of sad on top of the sad that I've already been this year. But I think what that illustrates is just the fact that we are working really hard. You are working really hard. And the system is rigged. Okay, so if the system is rigged, what do we do about this? Einstein said, no problem can be solved from the same level of consciousness that created it. Meaning the solution can't be at the level of the problem. It has to be at a different level. So as artists, we cannot equate struggling with art's work. It's not that we're struggling with art. We have to redefine it as a capitalist issue. We are not struggling artists. We are struggling capitalists. The struggle is from the system. We are not struggling artists. We are struggling capitalists. Okay, so the solution to the problem of the struggling artist is not in gaming the system, right? For me, it wasn't like, okay, let me do this pyramid scheme, which is like highly, highly capitalistic. I feel like every episode I make up a word and sound ridiculous, but that's my word for today, capitalismistic. Doing that pyramid scheme was basically digging into the capitalist system that wasn't working, right? It wasn't set up to work for me. And I dug my heels into it further until I realized, wow, this is now doubly not working for me. Because here's the thing with the art. Your art may be incredible and may be impactful and may be meaningful and may be necessary. And it still might not be a commercial success, because the game of capitalism means, you know, more, 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 get more, be richer, get more, be richer. But the longer that you play it, the more you realize that that's an illusion for the people who hold the most wealth in this country. When, again, I'm just going to remind you, 63% of Americans live paycheck to paycheck, and the federal minimum wage as of this recording is $7.25 an hour. Okay. So the solution to $7.25 an hour poverty wage, the solution to that can't be at the level of the problem. So the solution, it's not $15 an hour, it's $24 an hour. $24 an hour is at the level of the solution. It's beyond the level of the problem that says, well, productivity is going to go up by 72%, but hourly rates are going to only grow by 9% over, you know, 40 years or whatever it was. That's ridiculous. So the problem cannot be, sorry, the solution cannot be at the level of the problem. The solution to feeling like a struggling artist is to redefine yourself as a struggling capitalist. Blame it on capitalism. I blame everything on capitalism. Craig and I get in a fight, blame it on capitalism. My daughter won't nap, blame it on capitalism. It's really fun. I'm joking, obviously. She's not napping because of capitalism. But I am just trying to underscore the fact that we internalize things as artists. We go through incredible periods of unwellness because of a lot of things, because of, you know, chronic depression and anxiety, because of those kinds of, you know, maybe genetic, maybe deeply rooted neurological things, and also because of the systemic pressures and weight of capitalism, as again, I'm quoting Kimberly Dodson, the weight of that capitalism to make us feel like every single step we take is one taken in struggle. So the solution to feeling unwell about the art that you're making, because maybe it's not making money or it's not getting you perhaps as far along as you thought it would be taking you, or basically if someone comes up to you and says, have I seen you in anything, or when can I see you in something, or, you know, when are you going to make it? Any of those questions that make you want to rip your eyeballs out, you know, the solution to that is not to answer that question. It's not to give that person an answer at the level of the question that they're asking it. The solution to that is to disassociate from that question, be confused about that question. Well, I don't really understand what that means, because as an artist, you keep making your work. You keep going. You do not stop. You do not wait for capitalism to say, yes, you've sold your pilot, you are a success. No, you claim it, you do your work, you keep claiming it, you keep doing your work. You decide to keep doing it. And there are probably a million other solutions too. One thing you can do to help reframe it in the moment that someone asks you this kind of question is see if you can separate out the weight that you feel. So is the weight that you're feeling from the artistic task itself, or is it the weight from the system that you're playing in? And that, I think, is one way to just like take stock really quickly. Why am I feeling heavy? Is it because I don't like the challenge of the work that I feel called to do? Or is it because I live in a culture and a society that is not necessarily supportive of anyone's work, much less an artist's? Okay, so last thing that I want to tell you, because I want to end on a high note. All right, to review, we have a minimum wage that is $7.25 an hour, and if it kept up with the rate of productivity and inflation, it, in the year 2021, would be $24 an hour. We have 63% of Americans who are living paycheck to paycheck. Mental health is absolutely a struggle in this country. We had an opioid crisis that turned into a financial crisis that turned into COVID crisis. There are mothers in this country and fathers who cannot feed their children. There are children growing up in poverty. There are 8 million Americans living in poverty right now. I mean, there is a mental health crisis in all of this. There is no way that these economic pressures can weigh on us without them having a collective mental effect, right? So here's the high note I promised. In 1963, there was this guy named Frank Baron who was a creativity scholar, which I think that's kind of hilarious that someone was called a creativity scholar, because I just feel like So in 1963, if someone tried to do that now, they'd be like, get out of here, creativity scholar, go write a blog. But anyway, so he was a creativity scholar, and he wrote that, quote, the creative genius is both more primitive and more cultured, more destructive and more constructive, occasionally crazier and yet adamantly saner than the average person. Okay, that was the quote. There's probably a lot of problematic language in that, but and the larger context that he was talking about. But basically he's saying, yeah, like artists are both struggling deeply with mental health and are incredibly sane. All right, so there was this new study published in the journal Psychology of Aesthetics, Creativity in the Arts, where researchers basically set out to empirically test this quote that this guy made, this creativity scholar blogger, Frank Barrett. All right, so they said that this is what they found. They surveyed 309 artists and a similarly sized sample of workers who had no training in the arts. Both groups were asked about their psychological vulnerabilities, which were defined as the degrees of stress, anxiety, and depression they experience in their everyday lives. Subjects were also asked about their psychological resources, which included characteristics like self-acceptance, personal growth, positive relationships, autonomy, hope, and ego resilience. The results showed that the artists ranked moderately higher on the stress and anxiety measures, but also on those indicating hope, ego resilience, and psychological well-being. In other words, the artists were both, quote, crazier and, quote, saner than the non-artists, as Barron phrased it. So what does that mean? In this context where we have the weight of capitalism, as Kimberly Dodson put it, weighing down on our day jobs, on our gig work, on our artistic pursuits, basically any kind of way we're trying to function as a worker in this world, we have the weight of capitalism weighing down on us. And adding into that social pressures and social uprisings and the extreme polarization that we live in, not to mention just neurological factors that people deal with, drug addiction, all of that, we have this mental health crisis as well. We have a system weighing down on us. We have the mental health crisis. And then we have this creativity scholar who's basically in this study that was just done. It was proved that people who are artists or arts workers experience profound richness. The struggle is fully lived. The resilience, the overcoming, is fully lived. I mean, this is based on a study, right? One study of about 600 people. And I think, you know, whether you feel like you're currently in the struggle of capitalism, the struggle of a mental health crisis, the struggle of just feeling like, wow, I don't know where I'm even going to go this year when we finally get out of the COVID crisis. Like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know what my life, my art looks like. Whether you're there or you're in a more, you know, you're feeling more hopeful. You're feeling like, okay, we're going to come through this and I see where I'm going to go. You as an artist are poised to put this world in a proper context. You are poised to reframe these questions when they come at you. Why haven't I seen you in anything? When are you going to make it? When are you going to be on Broadway? When am I going to hear your record? Or when are you going to have a gallery open? Or whatever it is, right? When are you going to achieve this thing? Whatever that thing is for you that drives you nuts and triggers you and just makes you feel like you want to crawl out of your skin whenever anyone asks you that. When someone asks you that, you reframe it. I am not a struggling artist. I'm a struggling capitalist. And of all these people in this study, I was the kind of person that was going to be able to take us through this and take us out of this struggle, take us out of this system, or at least reframe the system in my small corner of the world so that we can start collectively, we can start to collectively reframe this whole conversation together. You know, that's a lot to ask. We're tired. I understand. I am tired too. But essentially, that's like what we're here to do. And I just wanted to share that with you today because I wish I knew that at 22. I wouldn't have believed it. I still would have needed to learn it. But I wish someone had told me, you know, it's not you. It is genuinely rigged. It is genuinely difficult. It is genuinely a challenge. And if you decide to pursue it anyway, you have made it. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Winding though it may have been, I really would love to hear from you. So in the show notes, as you're looking at my citations for all my facts, there's a little spot where you can leave me a voice message. So if something resonated with you, either like, Courtney, you're so off, you're so wrong, or yes, oh my God, I've been thinking about this and I totally relate to what you're saying, please drop me a voice message. I would love to hear it and I would love to share it in a future episode. So leave me a voice message and let me know what you thought about this episode. Obviously, if you enjoyed it, please do share it with someone else who you think might need to hear this. You know, I try not to go too crazy with my goals, but I do have a goal with this particular project, the Break Breakdown, that if there are other people like me out there who just want to make good work and just want to make an impact, I really do hope that we band together, we come together as a collective, we come together as a movement, and we just start making things that are, you know, undeniable, impactful, vibrant, alive, true. And I would be really happy with that. So if there's someone who you think might be on board for that, please share this with them. And you know what? Thank you for listening all the way to the end of this. You are a champ. And I really, really, every time y'all tune in, I really appreciate it. So thank you so much for being so generous. And I'll talk to you soon.